You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, September 6, 2017.
A lot of jails are feeling that effect, and we find most of the jails don't have room to help us. The opportunity to house an inmate somewhere nearby is limited at times.
Inmates incarcerated in Monroe County are being sent to different jails around the state due to periodic overcrowding at the Monroe County Jail. WFHB correspondent Alex Davis speaks with Monroe County Sheriff Brad Swain about the situation in the jail in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, donations to hurricane relief victims often end up in the wrong hands. Learn how to spot a donation scam and how to maximize your dollar on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, here are your daily headlines.
The City of Bloomington continues to move forward in its development of the Dimension Mill co-working space. The Redevelopment Commission has approved contracts with Hennepin Marketing CEO Pat East to act as executive director and Weddle Brothers Construction to oversee the mill's renovation. The Dimension Mill is a central element in the city's plans for a downtown technology park. Earlier this year, the city contracted with Bloomington Economic Development Commission to create a nonprofit to run Dimension Mill's a co-working space. Brian Payne is the Economic Development Commission's Assistant Director of Small Business Development. Payne told the commission on September 5th that East, who serves on the advisory committee of the Bloomington Technology Partnership, is perfect for the job.
We're looking for someone whose skill set straddles being someone who is legitimized and credible within the tech community, who has management skills, which Pat certainly has in spades as CEO, and somebody who can execute a business plan and a vision and be a public ambassador for the project. And there's not that many people, unfortunately, that are in the middle of that Venn diagram. And so Pat has been maybe one of the best examples of someone in the community who's already playing that role from a networking perspective and from a sort of innovation mentor perspective.
Payne said the city looked to successful co-working and tech startup spaces in the state, namely Matchbox in Lafayette, Speakeasy in Indianapolis, and Launch Fishers, as models for the Dimension Mill co-working space. He says East could bring the Dimension Mill the same kind of success.
Launch Fishers is in Fishers, Indiana, right, which is a suburb of Indianapolis. The town has grown to be actually approaching Bloomington size, and it's probably the best-known example of one of these facilities being successful. So there's hundreds of members at Launch Fishers. It's a co-work space. There's curriculum surrounding it. There's a really active entrepreneurial network. And that was created out of nowhere in the last 5-6 years. And so we were looking for someone who could play the same role as the gentleman who took Launch Fishers from a concept to all the way through execution.
As director of the mill, Pat East will be expected to create a business plan and bring in corporate sponsorships. Payne said East has already done work on behalf of the mill project, including coordinating judging at the INX3 entrepreneurial competition held at the site this summer.
So he's created a series of events for networking to develop professional skills for the entrepreneurship and innovation economy and to create buzz around the mill.
Before approving East's contract, Commission member Sue Scambaluri pressed for specifics of his job duties as executive director, including how much money he will be expected to raise. Scambaluri also asked for a list of board members for the Dimension Mills nonprofit to whom East will report.
Again, this is a noteworthy salary.
Yeah.
It's not astronomical, but it's a noteworthy salary.
Yeah.
And right now we kind of don't know who's supervising this person, and there aren't really metrics attached to the job yet. So I understand that that will come into play, but I would be interested in seeing that at some future meeting.
In addition to East, the BEDC is looking to hire a community manager to handle Dimension Mill operations and a marketing coordinator. The two subcontractors will be subject to approval by the Redevelopment Commission, and all three will report to the nonprofit board of directors. As for the contract with Weddle Brothers Construction, City Controller Jeff Underwood said the company will not only oversee the Dimension Mills renovation, but also the downtown tech parks, roads, and other infrastructure.
They're essentially going to be our representative working with both the design team and the construction folks to make sure that it stays on schedule, that it stays on budget, that what's called out for in the contract is what gets installed to keep the cost in the budget.
According to Underwood, the city anticipates recouping the cost of the Weddle contract through the cost savings it expects will result from having a construction manager overseeing the projects.
They're looking at the infrastructure on the tech park, they're looking at the mill construction, and they're looking at the solution tree issue there, that's the stormwater and the key element of how we're going to retain and disperse stormwater. So each one has its own set of complications. And they have the all-around expertise. They'll also be working with us on value engineering for all three of the projects to get the best product at the best price.
Underwood said the projects are expected to be completed by the end of 2018.
The Indiana Distillers Guild is launching an effort to gain a presence in the State House. Bloomington's Cardinal Spirits founder and president of the Indiana Distillers Guild, Jeff Wuslich, says the cooperative of 17 distilleries around the state is seeking greater say at the governance table.
And it's a group that's working together to both promote the industry. So we're doing a festival coming up on September 30th, which will be the first time you can try out almost all the distilleries in Indiana and their spirit up in Indianapolis, and also working to make sure that we can earn parity at the State House with breweries, wineries, and other alcohol producers.
Wuslich says the Guild's request for lobbying proposals is necessary because of Indiana's stringent and often inconsistent regulations on alcohol.
Indiana and alcohol has always had an awkward relationship. I would say that, you know, we're clearly in the friend zone when it comes to alcohol in Indiana. Since 2013, when artisan distillers permit became a possibility, which allows businesses like Cardinal Spirits to exist, where we produce spirits on site, but also are able to sell them directly to the consumer. We've been working to advance our cause at the State House. What's important for people to know is that the legislature created this industry in 2013. They allowed us to exist, and we're very thankful for them. And so the State House give us that power and that responsibility, but they can also take it away. And so we always need to be vigilant up there and looking to get, like I said before, maybe parity with wineries and breweries.
Wuslich says hiring a lobbying firm to navigate the different laws and ordinances in Indiana is the next step for the Indiana Distillers Guild after their inaugural festival in Indianapolis on the 30th.
Yeah, so the Guild has been formed, and we're right now seeking out representation. We've already gotten several proposals from lobbyists up at the State House. We'll have a tasting event in September, which will kickstart kind of announce the Guild to the general public. That's on September 30th up in Indianapolis. And so hopefully we'll be well represented when the legislature goes into session in the new year.
25 distilleries are currently licensed in Indiana. The Indiana Distillers Guild is also headed by West Fork Whiskey Company's David McIntyre and Hotel Tango co-founder Brian Wilsey.
The Bloomington Sanitation Division is phasing out their old system of trash and recycling pickup and phasing in a new model. According to a press release earlier this week, new waste and recycling bins will be distributed to city residents this Monday, September 11th, until September 28th, and members of the public can use the new carts beginning on October 2nd, and the first pickup will occur from October 9th through the 19th. Old carts and recycling bins can be placed on the curb for disposal. The new trash and recycling bins will allow residents to not separate out their recycling. Under the current system, cans, plastic, cardboard, and glass all must be separated from one another. Now, unused trash stickers can be refunded from October 16th through the 18th at City Hall Showers Complex, although the city will be granting refunds after the 18th through the 28th at Bloomington Community Farmers Market. Now, after October 28th, people looking to refund their trash stickers will need to complete a form in person at City Hall. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Overcrowding at the Monroe County Jail is driving new policies, including the exporting of inmates to neighboring county jails. But increasing incarceration rates across southern Indiana are beginning to stress the ability for jails to trade inmates, and now the Monroe County Jail is in danger of violating an agreement with the state of Indiana.
The Monroe County Jail is facing overcrowding. The county's seen a recent increase in incarcerations, resulting in a lack of beds for detainees. Sheriff Brad Swain says the overcrowding is due to a repeating issue.
So our jail overcrowding problem is directly related to probation violations. And Chief Dekoff has talked with his officers about not arrest, you know, to cite people into court whenever possible rather than bringing them to the jail, because he is very well aware of the crowding issue as well.
Swain said the facility has the capacity to hold 278 prisoners. That limit of 278 detainees is a result of a 2008 lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana. The county jail was so overcrowded in 2008 that inmates were sleeping in the jail's gymnasium.
Yes, there was a lawsuit filed due to overcrowding. Inmates were placed all together in an indoor recreation area with mattresses on the floor. They took a look at our bed count in our jail, and that was an agreed-upon number, I guess, through some arbitration. Not to satisfy, but to prevent the lawsuit from being filed or the lawsuit proceeding through the federal court system. So in a sense, it's an agreed-upon stay between Monroe County and the Civil Liberties Union.
Swain says the county jail trades inmates to neighboring county correctional facilities in order to make sure that the jail doesn't exceed capacity. According to a Herald Times interview with the Monroe County Jail Commander Sam Crow, the jail trades inmates to neighboring Owen County in exchange for the training of some Owen County personnel to avoid paying a transfer fee. Swain says the number of inmates can sometimes reach 300 due to the number of detainees in the county's drunk tank.
We have an agreement with the Indiana Civil Liberties Union or the American Civil Liberties Union to keep our population at the Monroe County Correctional Center to a certain level, and that is under 300. Part of that agreement is that if we do reach that 300 level, that we start housing some of our inmates in other county jails, which can accommodate us. And there is a state mandated fee of $35 a day in which we're allowed to pay another jail to house our inmates.
Swain says that the jail reaches 300 inmates, particularly during Indiana University games. Inmates' criminal charges are reviewed unless serious offenses are placed in misdemeanor blocks. Swain says state law 1006 requires the county jail to house lower-level felons for up to 2 years.
Generally, we just call around. Our jail commander and his administration calls around to see if a jail, and hopefully a jail nearby, has the room to accommodate us. Because of this 1006 law, a lot of jails are feeling that effect, and we find most of the jails don't have room to help us. And, for example, Knox County, which is near the Terre Haute area and also Evansville area, houses a lot of the overcrowding from Vandenberg and Vandenberg County as well as Vigo County. So the opportunity to house an inmate somewhere nearby is limited at times. So that option, even though that's the one we are supposed to exercise, sometimes we don't have that option.
Other county jails across southern Indiana have been filling up as well, resulting in a lack of ability to train inmates to resolve overcrowding. Swain says that the overcrowding in jails means more detainees are being pushed into work release programs, where their cases are reviewed and they are granted a supervisory period where they will make weekly payments.
There are initial hearings when a person is arrested, and a judge may very well review the history and decide that a person who was arrested could be released on their own recognizance or just determine that they need to stay in jail. The judges work very hard to ensure at the initial hearing phase that only the people that really need to be in jail are here, and they release a lot on their own recognizance to help keep that population number down.
Swain stated that he spoke to one judge about the problem of lower-level crimes pulling people back into jail. Some people opt for time spent in jail rather than probation.
I have told the judge, in my view, some of these obligations that they're given, they're destined to fail. I couldn't meet those obligations every day to be at a location every single day at the same time. Something's going to happen in life where that doesn't. That's just not possible. You know, to really look at what crimes should even have probation attached to them and suspended sentences, I think really need to be explored when it's such a large contributor to the jail overcrowding. I don't know that some people that come in for minor crimes, we need to be spending so many resources trying to fix an issue of why they like to have drinks on the weekend. And there needs to be some serious examination of just who should be on probation.
Swain says incarceration rates from Monroe County are increasing and that a permanent solution needs to be found before the jail is in violation.
That was WFHB correspondent Alex Davis speaking with Monroe County Sheriff Brad Swain about the periodic overcrowding at the Monroe County Jail.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Americans are famously generous. Every time there's a disaster somewhere, Americans give money and time and services and lots of things to help the victims. And every time there's a disaster, scammers and swindlers try to grab some of those donations for themselves. It's happening again with Hurricane Harvey, which has devastated Houston. Thousands of people had to be rescued, several dozen are dead, and tens of thousands are still in shelters. Unless you're going to load up a truck and head down there yourself, the best way to help is probably to donate money. But don't give cash. Write a check to an organization, never to an individual, or use a credit card. And be very sure you know who you're really giving to. As always, fraudsters are making all kinds of heart-rending appeals for help, and beyond that, they're faking up letters, emails, social media posts, and websites that look like they're from legitimate charities. Facebook, for instance, said it would match donations made through their network, but scammers have been putting up Facebook pages and links that mimic the real page. It's safe enough to give to the Red Cross, the United Way, or any long-established charity you've given to. But before giving to any good cause you've never dealt with, check the organization out on websites like charitynavigator.org. That's all one word, charitynavigator.org. And if you're giving online, do not click on links in emails or social media posts. Type the address in your browser and always look for the closed padlock icon to make sure it's a secure website. And speaking of fake emails, the FBI and the IRS are warning about fake emails that look like they come from them, complete with their logo and everything, asking you to complete a questionnaire. All you have to do is click a link, maybe a button that just says here, but if you do it, you don't get a questionnaire, you get some really nasty ransomware. Still, there is some good news from the FBI. They recently took down Dawn J. Bennett, a 55-year-old Maryland woman who's been piling it on. She's accused of running a Ponzi scheme, preying on elderly investors, which glommed about $20 million over the last 3 years, and using the swag to buy fancy clothes, jewelry, and a $500,000 suite at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. But that's not all. She was casting spells on the cops. When they raided her home, they found a freezer full of sealed mason jars containing information about lawyers working for the Security and Exchange Commission and instructions on how to put them under a beef-tongue-shut-up hoodoo spell. Apparently her jinx was junk, or maybe the hex got hacked when the SEC folks pulled out their Harry Potter wands and murmured, "Finite incantatum." I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Alex Davis, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Alex Davis.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Brown County Hour, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
It's toot me, right?
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.